We're discussing kinship caregivers and how it fits into the child welfare system umbrella, if you will, here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's when grandparents or close relatives like aunts and uncles care for a child whose own birth parents are unable to care for them. And a child can be placed with kinship caregivers under a variety of circumstances that we'll learn about. Kinship care and foster care are similar, but there are key differences. Have you provided kinship care? Can you talk about the circumstances or what you learned by providing this care? Have you been a part of the foster care system? What is your perspective on being in the care of your kin or relatives or not having that option? 800-642-1234. Oriana Carey is CEO of the Coalition for Children, Youth, and Families, a statewide organization helping people who foster, adopt, or go through kinship care. Oriana, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you so much for having me this morning. I look forward to the conversation.
Yes, we do too. So give us some, some nuance here. The State Department of Children and Families say roughly 7,000 children are in out-of-home care, and that could mean that they would be in foster homes or shelters or group homes. Give us an idea of the children who are in the kinship care. How many kids are we talking about?
So as I talked about, I'm going to take you to the Wisconsin DCF site because I don't have that right in front of me this morning. We are talking more and more, children who are in foster care. So of our 7,000 children who are currently in out-of-home care, a good portion of them are considered to be in foster care. They could be outside of foster care. They could be in a more restrictive setting of residential treatment, needed or group homes. Like you said, a large majority of our out-of-home care children are in foster care. These are families who have volunteered, taken additional training, background checks, and those sort of things to take care of a child when their parent is not able. But a growing and what we believe in our system is better for children are children that are being cared for by a grandparent, an aunt, uncle, someone known to them in the family. That is still not as large as our foster care numbers, but it is growing, and we would like to see more of that happen for children because it's considered to be better and less disruptive for them.
Now, there's court-ordered kinship care and voluntary. Can you explain the difference?
Well, what we know is it's, again, these are complex nuances of the law. When we're talking about court ordered, that is those children we're talking about in the out-of-home care system in which child welfare has been involved, a judge has been involved. You know, for whatever reason, we are seeing an unsafe situation or a situation where it's in the best interest of the child to be with a relative at that time. Again, people go through background checks. There is support for them through a social worker many of the other nuances. When people are volunteering, for example, the system could be involved or it may not be involved. It may be, as we know, we sometimes families are on difficult times. Somebody is dealing with a mental health or issue of addiction. And again, a relative gets involved. Some people want to be involved with our systems of support and getting help. Some people would prefer to take care of relatives outside of any help or any
agency or oversight.
Yeah, some people consider that interference of the system. So, for example, I can tell you nationally, for every one child that's in that sort of court ordered or, you know, our foster care system is involved, there are 18 children that are in more of that voluntary informal situation. So while it is an important piece and happens within child protection, we have many, many relatives both here in Wisconsin and across the country who are helping take care of children.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Oriana Carey, who's CEO for the Coalition for Children, Youth, and Families, as we discuss the role of kinship care as part of the child welfare system and what is known about the implications of kinship care. Have you been part of the foster care system? Are you a foster parent now? What happened to you when you went to live with a close relative? How did that change your trajectory? 800-642-1234. What does your research say, Oriana, that keeping kids with relatives or people they know, what impact does that have on the child?
So typically what we know is that when we have to get involved in somebody's life, meaning the child welfare system, just the involvement alone is considered a traumatic experience on top of the other traumas known. When children can be with people known to them, the belief and the thoughts are that we can reduce that trauma. We also know that relatives are more likely to stick with it, that we can reduce placement disruption and that, you know, we're going to stick in there when behavior and behavior challenges get tough. Now, let me be very clear, because we also work with and are very close with many foster and adoptive parents here in Wisconsin, and there are many of them that do that as well. So I don't want to by any means suggest that that's not accurate in foster care.
In your work in this area, do you think there is enough effort for the system to place children with kin versus placing them in a foster care setting?
I would say that we are working more and more as a system to see that happen. Mm-hmm. You know, we have to continue to build on support systems for that to happen. We have to work on engagement with family early and often so that people feel comfortable telling us about potential family members. And we have to keep asking questions and helping people feel safe and supported.
What is the process like to become a kinship caregiver through the State Department of Children and Families, which has administrative code, it has criteria? What is that like?
So just, it, you know, there are some similarities between foster care and kinship care in that while the Department of Children and Families, the state, for example, has an oversight role, out-of-home care is something that happens on a county level. So typically people are engaging with one of our 72 counties, Department of Children and Family Services themselves. You're going to work with somebody who is responsible for that work at the county level to work through the background checks, look through the support that's needed, help get connected services and the like.
We're talking with Oriana Carey, who leads a statewide advocacy organization, the Coalition for Children, Youth, and Families. Have you ever gone to live with a relative in a kinship care situation? What was that like? Was it a voluntary or a court-ordered kinship? What do you think of Wisconsin's foster care system or your experience in it? Join in, 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're discussing the kinship care piece of the child welfare system on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Looking at the most recent Children's Bureau data from the federal government published in June 2020, There were more than 133,000 children placed into a foster family home who is a relative of the child. That made up 32% of the placement settings. A non-relative foster family was 46% of foster care placements. What questions do you have about kinship care, how it works here in Wisconsin? Have you ever taken care of someone who isn't your biological child? What support or resources did you need? 800-642-1234 to join in. Oriana Carey is CEO of the Coalition for Children, Youth, and Families, who is with us for the hour. Oriana, how does kinship care affect people's perceptions of family roles and the role of family stepping up, if you will?
Well, thank you for that question. So, you know, that is got a lot of complex nuances to it. So I'm going to channel a colleague of mine from California that likes to use the acronym, the other TPR. We call TPR Terminational Parental Rights and Child Welfare, but she calls, when we're working in relatives, she calls it termination of previous roles, meaning that we've now, you know, grandma can become more in a mother, you know, role. Same with aunt, uncle. There can be some challenges within the family nuances, depending about how everybody felt about the situation. And so there's a lot of that to negotiate. I would say also a lot of the training that we have to support families in out-of-home care has been built on a lot of our old ways, meaning foster care. And while the training, even at our organization, and the information can be very helpful, there are some nuances. You know, I am coming to this situation as a relative. A lot of training around working with the birth family or birth parent who is having some difficulties. You know, there are differences when that's my daughter or son, or that's my sister or brother, cousin. And so we have to be mindful of all of those nuances.
Because you have to also understand the impact of the family dynamics, I would imagine, that is in play as well. And also what that child is feeling about, you know, being in the care of a relative.
Yes, very much so. How that child is feeling. And, you know, I planned on being grandma. Mm-hmm. And as those of us who know, you know, the role of grandma is very different than mom or dad, or, you know, grandma or grandpa, I should say. You know, the other thing I wanted to correct myself in the last, little bit too, is making sure that we recognize it's not just the 72 counties. We're also talking about our 11 sovereign tribes here in Wisconsin. And, you know, you asked me about benefits. You know, within our Native American community, relatives are a much broader reaching term, and kinship is an extremely important, way of taking care of kids within our Native American communities.
We're talking with Oriana Carey, CEO of the Coalition for Children, Youth, and Families, as we discuss the role of kinship care in helping families in situations where the birth parents are unable to care for a child in difficult times. You can join in with your insights, what you've experienced, 800-642-1234. Ruth is with us from Altoona. Hi, Ruth. What can you share?
Hi. Hi. What I have witnessed twice now in Eau Claire County are individuals who come forward in the foster system to care for a child and then decide that given the instability of the family of origin for this child and the fact that they get very attached to a child or children, they decide that they're going to move forward to adopt this child and give them a stable home. I have seen the process drag on once they make this decision And these are families that have been vetted. You know, they know that this is a good home. They get these children get visits all the time. And it takes years. I mean, this drags on for years where the family, foster family, is ready to adopt. The system drags on, legal games get played. The parent or parents are not stable. There's, you know, issues with drug use or and this I don't understand how this drags on for years. It's like the children.
Ruth, I want to jump in here, Ruth, for a moment and let Oriana address the situation that you're seeing. Go ahead.
I would say the situation that Ruth is sharing is a common frustration that many of the people that talk to us and engage with us every day. There are so many nuances to that. Our court systems and availability of attorneys for family members, court dates, our judges' abilities to meet a court demand is part of it. We also very much in this state, you know, when we terminate somebody's rights, we have to remember that those are somebody's constitutional rights. And, you know, it is frustrating for people. There are legal processes, and it does feel like it goes on. And nobody wants children to be waiting for a very long time. I wish I had an easy answer to that, Ruth. I would say that there are many of us on various committees working on it, including, you know, the Wisconsin Supreme Court has a children's advisory group, you know, that we all work together to look at ways that this doesn't happen and how we can have our processes move more smoothly for everyone involved, most importantly, children, so they do not linger.
I would imagine, too, that job one is trying to reunite the child with their birth parent and working to build up those support systems so that can happen.
Yes. So that is the number one priority of our child welfare system is to help reunify families. Again, I know that that is often very frustrating for folks because there are so many complexities to that. One of them being that, you know, when we talk about mental health or substance abuse, let's talk about first trying to get folks the services and the help they need. And what we know, not only here in Wisconsin, but nationally, we have long waiting lists. We have challenges of getting people the help they need. And so giving them time to do the work they need to be reunified. And at the other side of it, as Ruth points out, is, you know, those pieces that are holding up our systems. So, you know, to her point, when we don't get people and that we don't show that we've all worked together and tried in the best interest of the child to reunify the family, that's what also can drag this process on.
I want to ask also about resources and funding. State law determines the amount of kinship care funding available per child. And it looked like when we looked it up, 2020 to 2021, the monthly rate was $254. Can you explain the payment system?
That is a very complex you know, question in that there are ways when people go to what are called a level one foster care licensing where that payment goes up. It really has to do with the nuances between the federal dollars that come into the state of Wisconsin and what amounts are allocated for what part of the system. So advocacy groups like Generations United, who advocate on behalf of grandparents, or they call them grandfamilies, would say, you know, that we need to do some changes in our system, because yes, that sounds like, you know, a low number to everyone, and yet it has a lot to do with how those federal streams of money come into our system.
Well, it also seems so low when you look at the amount of federal pandemic aid that is rolling into states, and states, their coffers flush, and then you see a number like a monthly rate of $254, and there's just such a disconnect there.
There is. There is. And that's why, you know, so when I say we need to do work all together on having more children placed with relatives, we all know that reimbursements and supports are that other place of advocacy that needs to take place both at the state and federal level.
Orianna Carey, CEO of the Coalition for Children, Youth, and Families, has been with the statewide organization for 14 years. Do you think there should be more effort and focus on placing children with their kin first? Or does that present new challenges in trying to keep vulnerable children in their families' orbit? Do you have a story to share about providing or receiving kinship care? 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update on the Ideas Network. We're discussing child welfare in Wisconsin and the foster care and adoption system on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. There were about 7,000 kids in out-of-home care by the end of 2020. That's the data from the State Department of Children and Families released in their December annual report. DCF says 39% of those children had relative placements. And these numbers do not take into account voluntary kinship of about 5,300 children. Have you been a part of the foster care system? Are you a foster parent? Why did you become one? Have you ever adopted a foster child? 800-642-1234. Orianna Carey leads the Coalition for Children, Youth, and Families, founded nearly 40 years ago. And she is with us for the hour. Let's bring on another caller now. Tyrus is joining us from Minneapolis. Tyrus, hi. What is your story?
Hi. I just had a question about adoption. I had kids that was adopted, and basically my parental rights was like forced from me. So I was wondering how do I go about like pursuing that?
So you had children, parental rights were severed, and you want to know what is the process of reuniting with the children?
Yes, because my parental rights was taken, I guess, due to the mother and what she was doing. And they said that since that we was together, that mine's would have to be taken too. But I never got a chance to, like, fight for my kids or nothing like that.
Huh. Orianna, what would you say?
I would say that is a really, really difficult situation, and I'm really, really sorry about that. And what I'm going to recommend is that I have staff who take phone calls each and every day, and what really helps is if we can spend time understanding your individual situation and trying to help you make connections to find out the information you're looking for. So if you can, do you have a pen to write this phone number down?
And what I would say, too, for Tyrus, if you could just stay on the line and our producer will be able to jump in and provide that phone number to the Coalition for Children, Youth, and Families. Is that okay, Tyrus?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, very good. Just hang tight. Let's take another call now. Chris in Greendale. Chris, hi. Hi, Chris. Are
hi,
you
how
there?
You
yes. Hi.
I sure am. Hey. I was just. I'm hearing, and I think I understand the kind of implicit idea behind being reunited with the biological parent being the foundational kind of goal. But I just feel like I think like that should be a secondary or tertiary goal in a majority of these cases. I mean, I don't know that that's always what's best for the child, and I think that just the welfare of the child should be paramount. You know.
Chris, thank you for that. Orianna, what would you say there?
I would say that, you know, that's what makes all of this very complex, and the same reason I asked Tyrese to call one of our staff, because every one of these situations is very individualized. And Chris is right. There are so many different nuances that go on. We base a lot, not just us at the coalition, I would say system-wide, based on what youth have told us about their experiences. People, even in the best of adoptive situations, they love their adoption. They love their parents. It has nothing to do with those things. But there is this place of what we call ambiguous loss for kids when that separation happens. So we want to be really, really, really careful. And what we're trying to do is work more and more with families who, you know, it would almost be like you're talking open adoption, but that work with birth families. And more, the best foster and adoptive families we work with are very committed to that. They get extra training. They learn about that. And that relationship, if someone can't be reunified, that relationship can continue. Often, if that relationship gets built strong, you will have birth parents who will say, you know, I don't want to not care for my children, but if I can't do this, I want you to be that person. And that's all about relationship. And that is what we see work really well. So, you know, his question, I understand it's very much the public question. And I would just say these are human beings and families and children. And every one of these situations have lots of individual nuances to them.
Chris, thank you for that call. Oriana Carey with us, CEO of the Coalition for Children, Youth, and Families, as we talk about the role of kinship care in the child welfare system and how it works in the State Department of Children and Families. With your insights, your questions, and your experiences, front and center, 800-642-1234. Oriana, let's move on to perhaps some tips and advice. What would you tell someone who would be categorized as a kinship caregiver? What advice do you have?
Well, I will tell you what I would have, you know, just like I said to Tyree, we have a group of staff here who work tirelessly to be available, present, and very compassionate to whoever calls. And, you know, if you have some confusion or some questions, give us a call. Because what we also have is we have lots of people we know and we have built strong relationships with where we can help make connections to a peer or someone else who's experienced something similar. Or we can help you find those resources or find those numbers, find those phone calls. And at the same time, some folks just need somebody to listen. Hmm. And that's what our team does really, really well. It can be scary to complain or, you know, not your neighbor won't understand, your other family members. And my staff is here to listen, to really listen and try to be just there for you.
When you say it can be scary to complain, what do you mean by that?
Well, I think, you know, we have a very busy system. We have people who have a lot going on in all facets. And when people are moving fast, you can be misunderstood or mistaken of, you know, that you're tired or you're overwhelmed. And it may just be that you're having a bad day, you know, and we're here both to support, you know, the professional side and the family side with when people are having those bad days and they just need to get out, you know, their concerns. So I think it's just always when I use the word scary, I just say I think it's hard for people to reach out. We don't You know, we don't help people build up vulnerability in our world. And if I talk to people, they're going to think I'm not capable. And my team is here to coach and support and let people know you are capable. You are capable. This is really hard to do. And let us try to help you find some supports and some information and resources.
Do you find that the clients you work with, that the maneuvering and navigating through DCF, can that be confusing or unclear? Have there been questions about that or how to get through the system?
Well, I think it's the same thing. Yes, it's, you know, it's like anything that any of us does for the first time. Those of us who are the experts in our field, you know, we get to a point where we know our stuff inside and out, and we have to slow down to understand what you're asking and know that this is the first time people are hearing this. Mm. You know, again, in relative care, people, you know, this is my niece or nephew. I'm going to do a background check. I'm going to, you know, people can ask those sorts of questions. I'm sure you can understand because, you know, that in, you know, outside of our systems and rules and regulations and laws, there are certain things that just, you know, seem complex or more complex than they need to be.
I'm going to step back here. Politically, U.S. Senator Ron Johnson in recent days, Matt sent us an email to this effect that Senator Johnson said it's not society's responsibility to take care of other people's children. And Matt wants to know, how do comments like that affect public perceptions of the foster care system?
Oh, you know, that is a, you know, that's got so many layers to that. So first of all, I would say that at the coalition, we work very hard to be neutral in all areas, and especially bipartisan. To me, taking care of children in the best interest of children are not a one-party issue. I do think, though, when there are comments that are taken out of context, they could mean a whole load of things. You know, it's challenging. And I would say, yes, public perception is that we're tired and we're all trying to take care of our families as best we can. And many of us have been blessed and lucky to have family around us all the time to support us and help us. And we haven't had to use any help from our public systems. You know, typically when we're talking about a lot of the folks that we engage with, they may not have the same family or historic families of support. If they did, they would probably not be somebody seen by our system. You know, I mean, if my sister has some challenges today, I'm going to help take care of my nephew. Our family is resourced. We can do those things. And it's going to be one of those situations where you don't hear of the public involvement. But for some children and families, that is not the case.
Oriana Carey, CEO of the Coalition for Children, Youth, and Families, statewide organization. How would you like to see the foster care system in Wisconsin change? What have you learned from your role, from your vantage point in the system? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Oriana Carey here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're discussing the state of foster care, providing a temporary home for a child until they can be safely reunited with their biological family or reach another form of permanence in their life. About 7,000 children in Wisconsin are in out-of-home care. Still time to talk about what could improve the system. Help families, 800-642-1234. Oriana Carey, CEO of the Coalition for Children, Youth, and Families, and with us for about 10 more minutes. Let's bring in Eric now in Hazel Green. Hi, Eric. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to mention that I have a grandchild that kind of went through the system a little bit. And unfortunately, it was in two different states. We lived near Iowa, and we had to deal with both the Iowa system and the Wisconsin system. And it was kind of crazy dealing with both systems at the same time.
Wow. So what, can I ask, was the upshot of it? How is the situation now?
My son has full custody of his son.
Eric, go ahead. Oh, I think Eric is cutting out there. But, Oriana, couldn't you field Eric's situation there when dealing with two different systems, one in Iowa and Wisconsin?
Yes. And as, you know, you've heard all morning from people calling in, you're talking about other nuances that have to get involved. I like that he said his son has full custody, and it sounds like, you know, we have a child with a parent in a, I hope, safe and loving and nurturing, thriving place. It sounds from, you know, how he was ending that. But yes, I imagine what happens is we have to work through an interstate compact process between both states. And, you know, you're talking about staffing issues and all sorts of things on both sides. When I say that, meaning big caseloads and people trying to work through those processes. But I think the positive side of this story is that, you know, we have a father who has his child, and often in our system, fathers are overlooked, and that's probably a whole other show, Kate.
Is it common, though, that you have to work through an interstate situation where there are two states involved?
It can be. I mean, it can be. You're talking about, you know, like you said, we're out there, we talked about this morning, we're out there looking for relatives for a child. And as in any family situation, we have family members that might live close by, and we might have family members that live across state lines, and we have to work through those processes.
Let's go to Matt now in Jackson. Matt, hi. What did you encounter?
Hi. Yeah, my wife and I are empty nesters, and about a year ago, we went through the process. We were trying to do the foster to adopt program. And as somebody who went through, like, the classes and all the way to the very last appointment, some things were very disappointing to us, and then we pulled out last minute. A couple of things that I'd like to hear you address is when you're fostering to adopt, and there's somebody that is placed with you either due to the opiate crisis or, you know, maybe there's a maybe law enforcement has removed the child or something like that. And then the foster parents are, their name, phone number, and address is given to the other family members. And I just wanted to hear how you feel about that, if you think that's a problem or.
A privacy issue Matt is bringing up. Oriana?
You know, all I can say with that is part of the state licensing code. And I know that for some people that feels uncomfortable and it's not what they want to have. What we would say is that I know it's difficult sometimes to think of it from the standpoint of somebody who made some difficult choices on behalf of their children. But the reality of the situation is if it was my children tonight, I have a right to know who my children are staying with. And that's why that is part of the licensing process.
Matt, what did you learn by going through the classes and the process in the foster to adopt program?
Well, the second deal breaker was, so for an affluent couple in their 50s that still have high energy, empty nesters that still have something to give back, we kind of found another hurdle that came back to us that I'd also like you to address. They're like, you know, you make enough money to not pay for childcare, you know, so they were kind of trying to talk one of us into stop working. The case agent that came to our house, they were like, well, you both do very well, and you know, due to that, we have some issues as far as when they advertise that you're going to place a child with you, they say, like, childcare is provided up to the state up to 40 hours a week. And then if you make a fair amount of money, they'll ask you, you know, to not have the state use those resources. That was the other thing that said, nope, this is a deal breaker.
Matt, thank you. Oriana, is there that threshold for couples who, you know, make a certain amount and then the child care arrangement falls through, doesn't apply?
Yeah, it's difficult for me to respond to something that happened. You know, like I said, we have 72 counties, 11 sovereign tribes. We also have private agencies involved, and, you know, in an individual situation and making those comments that I just would prefer that I can't make a comment, you know, and I haven't been aware of specific thresholds. I know that on a county by county, agency by agency, sometimes there are things that get said in conversations in the licensing process, people and that get frustrating on all sides.
Let's look for solutions in our last moments together, because you served on, you know, several task forces. You've given testimony on foster care and adoption. How can the needs of children be prioritized as the state looks to change the system, improve the system? What should the next steps be?
Well, you know, let's talk about what we talked about in the first hour. You know, we need to support relatives in a level that they can make a good option, you know, a plan to take care of a child in their family. We need to continue to work with individuals like Matt, who just called, and help work through the nuances and help everybody see all the ways they can help children in a way that is best for children. We don't specifically have as much foster to adopt here in Wisconsin. Sometimes we're using that language, but really, you know, we are talking about people's individual lives, and we need to have commitments to that child and to their entire family lifelong, because even when the gavel goes down and even when the adoption is finalized, that child's birth family will forever be their birth family. And so we talk with people often about the families who've done this well. The families who have done this well over the long term, Kate, are people who are flexible, ongoing learners who have an incredible amount of resilience and persistence, and we are here to help and support all of them. And, you know, we also take lots of calls from many of the people who called here this morning, and you're always welcome to call us, talk to us about your frustrations, and we'll try to do our very best to help problem solve that or connect you with people that can.
Oriana, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me again this morning. And again, I know you'll have the contact information. And I
yes.
would just encourage people who want to know more to give us a call.
Oriana Carey, CEO for the Coalition for Children, Youth, and Families. We have a link to the coalition. It's at WPR.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.